Blog Talk Radio.
And how are you doing, everybody, today? Welcome to the CJ Rio podcast. We got a good show in store for you today. We're going to talk a little baseball, get some hockey, and then maybe a little of the NFL draft and NBA playoffs if we have time. Let's start it off with a story that blossomed last night. Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush, their group has reportedly reached an agreement to buy the Miami Marlins. According to ESPN, the group has reached an agreement to purchase the Marlins after submitting a bid of $1.3 billion. Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria reached the agreement to sell the Marlins to the Bush-Jeter group after its bid won the auction ahead of other potential buyers for exclusive negotiating rights. Now, the team has not been sold, but you got to imagine that when you make a bid of $1.3 million for a club like the Miami Marlins, Jeffrey Loria is going to be interested, and I think we definitely could see a sale. Loria, who is 76 years old, bought the Marlins in 2002 for $158.5 million. Any sale of the team would require approval of 75% of major league teams, but I do not think we'd see an issue with that. Well, Derek Jeter always said he wanted to be an owner and that he wants this as the second chapter of his life. You know, he's about to have a kid, got married. He's living the life after doing great things for us Yankee fans for many years. So best of luck to Jeter and Jeb. We'll see how long it takes for them to close. Maybe they'll even close in the middle of the season. I doubt that, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Let's talk a little about the Mets and the Yankees, their series coming up today. But first, let's just take a look at some of the live scores going on right now. Two Major League Baseball games happening right now, both in the top of the fourth, and it's a slugfest at Miller Park. The Brewers with an 8-3 lead on the Reds here in the top of the fourth, 3-4-1 for the Reds, 8-11-2 for the Brewers. And you talk about 8 runs and 11 hits for the Brewers. Marcus Thames, he is 1-for-1 with 2 runs scored. He has not hit a home run, believe it or not, even though he's been tested nonstop. He even made a comment about it. He said, "I got plenty of blood and urine." Just give the guy a break. Look, can we just didn't accept that sometimes players are going to do what you don't expect them to do? Yeah, there is a huge steroid problem. But you test him blood and urine, you test it all when he's got 8 homers, and then you test it again when he's got 10. What are you going to find? The guy is clean right now. He's on an incredible streak. Gary Sanchez was clean last season too. All right, give him a few tests, like 1 or 2, maybe like a third, if everything, just to assure everything's right. But you don't need to test him like every day he hits a home run. Like, give it a rest, MLB. Willie Peralta on the mound for the Brewers, and now it's second and third, so the Reds are clawing right back into this game. This was an 8-1 ball game in the beginning of the inning, but home runs by Adam Duvall and Schebler made 8-3. Now runners on second and third, 2 outs for Billy Hamilton. Peralta in this one, 3 2/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, all earned, a walk and 5 Ks for the Reds. Davis is on the mound, 2 2/3 innings, 11 hits, 7 earned runs, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, Aston on in relief. So maybe I'll keep you posted, see what happens with the Billy Hamilton situation. And the other game going on in Chicago, the north side, it is the Chicago White Sox taking on the Kansas City Royals at Guaranteed Rate Field. Of course, the brand new name, no longer U.S. Cellular. It is 2-0 Chicago, top of the fourth, 0-2-0 for the Royals, 2-3-0 for the White Sox. There is a runner on third. That is Eric Hosmer for Alex Gordon at the plate. Jose Quintana on the mound for the Sox. 3 2/3, 2 hits, 7 strikeouts so far. For the Royals, it's Nate Karns. three innings, three hits, two runs, both earned, and three strikeouts. So those are your current scores. Later games today, Houston takes on Cleveland, Yankees and the Red Sox, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Miami, Philly, Seattle, Detroit, Atlanta takes on the Mets, Minnesota versus Texas, Washington versus Colorado, San Diego against Arizona, Oakland against L.A., Los Angeles and the Giants, Toronto against St. Louis. And speaking of Toronto, St. Louis, you have to just Google what happened last night. Chris Coughlin scores by jumping over Yadier Molina, brings back visions of Major League 2 with Willie Mays Hayes and Jack Parkman. That was special. You got to Google that right now if you haven't seen it. Leidos and Carlos Martinez were the scheduled pitchers in that one. Okay, let's talk a little Yankees-Mets. We'll start off with the Mets. When I started my podcast yesterday, their game wasn't postponed at the time. It has been postponed now, that game. Well, obviously, it was postponed now. I don't even know what I'm saying there. It was postponed after my podcast, so the Mets and Braves will also be playing a two-game abbreviated series. The one game will be made up on September 25th as part of a single-admission doubleheader. So that's a nice gesture by the Mets, of course, going with the single-admission. Also, Billy Hamilton just struck out swinging, so the Reds strand two runners in scoring position, 8-3 Milwaukee, middle of the fourth. So the Mets and the Braves also are doing what the Yankees did and the Red Sox are doing. They are not changing the pitchers. It will still be Julio Teheran against Robert Zelman today, and then tomorrow it will be Noah Syndergaard taking on R.A. Dickey. So for the Mets, this hurts them. I mean, I know it's just a rainout, but this was a series where they definitely could have won three games with their pitchers on the mound going up against Colon, Dickey, and Teheran. Now they just have a two-game series. And, yeah, they can get momentum by just winning two. But we'll see what happens with the Mets. They definitely have to take two now, I think. I was talking about yesterday with the momentum, and they need some. They're 8-11. They're falling fast. The Nationals are right now at 14-6. So that means six games in the win column, five in the loss column, 5.5 games back are the Mets. So they gotta, you can't fall behind too early. Like, of course it's April and we've got 140 games to go, but you can't fall too far back. Gotta get some momentum. We'll see what happens with that. Yankees and Red Sox, we already talked about that. It'll still be Luis Severino against Rick Porcello. Yankees, two-game series against Boston. The second game will be made up in July. Same as yesterday, Yankees, Red Sox, just try to get the split. It's still going to be Tanaka versus Sale, and you don't want to have to just beat Chris Sale to get a split. Win this game tonight, Luis Severino has to stay hot, and the Yankees have to keep jumping on a ice-cold Rick Porcello. All right, let's move on to some hockey. We covered yesterday the Capitals and the Penguins, as well as the Blues and the Predators today. We will do Ducks, Oilers, and then a little Rangers, Senators. So when it comes to the Pacific Division, it has become a picture of consistency for the Anaheim Ducks. They won the division again this season, and it's almost time to lose count. They've now won the division 5 years in a row, dating back to the lockout season of 2013, that shortened season. That was only 48 games. Ducks won 30 of those. I mean, you just look at the Ducks year by year. 66 points in the lockout year, they won the division. 116, 109, 103, 105. Four consecutive seasons, the Anaheim Ducks have finished with at least 103 points. Absolutely fantastic. Their opponent, the Edmonton Oilers, the team that just refuses to quit. And they knocked out the defending Western Conference champion San Jose Sharks in six games, four games to two. Give credit to the Edmonton Oilers also. This is the team that lost a game to the San Jose Sharks 7-0 in San Jose And then they came back and said, we're going to win this series. We're not going to lose focus. We are going to do it. So this is going to be a fantastic series. I think the better series in the West, don't get me wrong, they're both great series, but Ducks Oilers is going to be fantastic. Game one is tonight, 26th at 10:30 p.m. You can catch that on NBC Sportsnet. Game two, Friday. Game three, Sunday. Game four, Wednesday. The earliest start time is 7, all of them after that. 10:30, 10:30, 7, and 10 p.m. Times have not been decided for games 5 through 7. Those would be on Friday, Sunday, and Wednesday. Take a look at the teams, how they fared throughout the season. The Ducks, 2.68 goals per game. That wasn't very good. That is not the numbers the Anaheim Ducks are used to when they've got the names like Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. They were letting goals this year by Richard Rakell, 18th in the league in goals for. They're going to need to do better than what they did. However, they did sweep the Calgary Flames in the first round of the playoffs, so they're hot at the right time. But the question of in the playoffs, when is too much rest a good thing? You've got the Edmonton Oilers hyped up after beating the Sharks, winning on their home ice, fighting tooth and nail. They're right there right now. So it's rest versus playing hot and playing well at a closer date. So we'll see which of those wins, and that's always a fun battle to watch. The Oilers were 8th in the league in goals for at 2.96 a game. When it comes to goals against, both of these teams were in the top 8. The Ducks, led by John Gibson, he became the full-time starter when Frederick Anderson was traded to the Leafs. A 2.40 goals against average for the team for the Anaheim Ducks, 2.52 for the Oilers, and that was essentially just Cam Talbot, who played what felt like every game for the Edmonton Oilers. They really, really relied on him, and he did not let them down. Power play percentage, the Oilers, 22.9, were 5th in the league. The Ducks, they didn't score many goals per game, so they did struggle on the power play. They were 17th in the league. Where they didn't struggle was the penalty kill. 84.7% was 4th in the league. The Oilers, 80.7, that was 17th. So very opposite ends of the spectrum going into this series. You've got the Oilers who have scored more and the Ducks that have not allowed goals. So John Gibson had a good first round. He had 3 wins in the series. It's not showing me his save percentage. I'll have to actually look that one up. In the first round against the Calgary Flames, let's see, where is he? John Gibson had a .924 save percentage, so a good series for him. He played well. I mean, you have to play well if you're a goalie and the team gets a sweep. So how did the other skaters do? Ryan Getzlaff led the way with 3 goals, something that he did not do enough of in the regular season. Kevin Bieksa, defenseman, led the team with 4 assists. 3 Ducks had 5 points. Antoine Vermette with a 62% faceoff percentage. And you look at faceoff percentage, that could be a huge point in this series. Why? Well, the Ducks were 1st in the league in faceoff at 54.7%. Who was last in the league? The Edmonton Oilers at 47%. That is a 7.7% difference. But Leon Draisaitl did have a good first round against the Sharks when it came to faceoff percentages, especially going up against a guy like Joe Thornton. He was 59.37%. in the dot. Some other Oilers, let's talk about Connor McDavid, his first playoff experience, a lot of first-time playoff experience for the Edmonton Oilers. He had 2 goals. He also had 2 assists, led the way with 4 points. Cam Talbot, a .927 save percentage. He won all 4 with 2 shutouts. He had back-to-back shutouts in games 2 and 3. It's going to be a great series. Definitely could go the distance. The Oilers, if they're going to win this series, they have to keep powering off home ice advantage where they won all 3 games at home, I believe. Let me just make sure of that so I'm not crazy. The first round in Edmonton, here were the games. Game 1, the Oilers lost 3-2 in overtime, a shutout in game 2, 2-0. Game 5, back in Edmonton, the Oilers won 4-3 in OT. So 2 wins and an OTL. So, look, Rogers Place is rocking. It's completely oranged out. The fans are really providing a great environment for the Edmonton Oilers. They have to keep winning. And if they're going to win the series, they have to win at home because you don't want to have to win going to a rival's home arena at the Honda Center in Anaheim. So I think it'll be a good series, but in the end, I'm going to keep riding the Edmonton bandwagon. I'm going to say Cam Talbot outduels John Gibson. I'm going to say Connor McDavid does his thing, and I'm going to give the Oilers the win in six. I think they win it on their ice. So that has my Western Conference final prediction at Edmonton versus St. Louis. All right, one more series. I talked about it a little, but now I'm going to go into it a little more. Ottawa versus the Rangers for all you New York sports fans. Well, who would have thought in the summer when the Rangers traded Derek Brassard to the Senators for Mika Zibanejad and a second-round pick that they'd meet up in the second round? I mean, there was a chance, but these teams have only met up once in the postseason. That happened back in 2012 when the Rangers came back, were the number one seed, came back from 3-2 down to win that series 4-3. Game one will be Thursday at 7 p.m. at Canadian Tire Center in the capital of the Great White North, Canada. 7 p.m. start on Thursday. It'll be a 3 p.m. start on Saturday for game two, and then both games at Madison Square Garden on Tuesday and Thursday, May 2nd and 4th, will be after 7 in prime time, 7 p.m. and 7:30, those games on NBC Sports. Game one on Thursday will be on CNBC. The Ottawa Senators defeated the Boston Bruins in the first round, 4-2. And a little note about the Bruins. Today they made it official that Bruce Cassidy, who took over in the interim for Claude Julien, he will be the permanent head coach for the Boston Bruins. But the Senators, they fell behind 1-0 against Boston. They lost that game one on home ice thanks to 2 goals by Brad Marchand. They shut him down for the rest of the series. Boston had a chance to take a 2-1 lead. Heck, they could have even got up 3-0. But the Senators were able to win games 2 and 3, both 4-3 in OT. They took the commanding 3-1 lead after the game 4 win where they took it 1-0. And then after a double overtime victory for Boston in game 5, they were not able to win in game 6 in overtime where the Senators dispatched of the Boston Bruins. For the New York Rangers, of course, it was a great series full of grit and heart between the Montreal Canadiens. Rangers, of course, 1-0 via the Henrik Lundqvist 31-save shutout. Montreal scored with 17 seconds left to force OT in game 2. They ended up winning on the Alexander Radulov goal late in the first overtime period. Henrik Lundqvist had 54 saves in that game. Montreal then beat the Rangers in what was maybe their worst effort in the AV era, maybe the worst effort in any hockey game ever. There was no effort in that game, and the Rangers got smoked. They then made that their rallying call, winning the next 3 games of the series, 2-1, 3-2 in OT, and 3-1 in the clincher. A lot of questions arose about the New York Rangers after that Game 3 defeat where they fell behind 2-1, their first game at home, and they took 12 shots in the first 2 periods and then 2 shots in the first 12 minutes of the third. A lot of times heart gets questioned with the New York Rangers, but they really turned it around. They proved that it was something that they were not going to hang their hat on. Jeremy Roenick called them out saying it was the worst playoff effort he had ever seen. And then the Rangers said, you know what, we're going to hit even more. We're going to get in their faces. We're going to make life uncomfortable for Carey Price. And then Henrik Lundqvist did the rest and outdueled Carey Price, and the Rangers were able to advance. Now, due to the playoff system, the Rangers faced a tougher opponent in round one than they will in round two. I'm not saying that based on the teams. I'm saying that based on the stats. The Montreal Canadiens were the Atlantic Division champions. Ottawa came in second. So, you know, this playoff system is broken. It is completely broken. The New York Rangers come in fourth in their division. They finish behind the Blue Jackets, the Penguins, and the President's Trophy-winning Capitals. And their reward? They don't have to face one of those teams until at least the conference final. They got to face the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators, both teams that would have finished fourth in the Metropolitan Division points-wise. And if they had to play the harder schedule that the Rangers had to play, the Rangers probably would have had a better record than the Montreal Canadiens. And, of course, if the Rangers didn't bench everybody towards the end, of course, in that game against Ottawa, things could have been a lot different. But either way, the Rangers have the path to the Eastern Conference Final they want. And I'll say the Montreal Canadiens are a better team than the Ottawa Senators. The Senators have some depth and some better scoring options, But Montreal has the best goalie in the world, and I'll still take their defense over Ottawa. The Rangers, they have a chance to really get into the Eastern Conference Final here by getting out of this series quickly. If they could end this series in 5 or 6, that means they would go into the Eastern Conference Final having only played 11 or 12 games, respectively. If you can do that after the Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins potentially fight for their lives against each other, the Rangers could have a solid chance at the Stanley Cup Final, but it's way too much thinking ahead. That's what the Washington Capitals did, and that almost got them an L against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Some stats throughout the regular season: the Rangers 4th in the league in goals per game at 3.08, Senators 22nd at 2.51, both against a narrow advantage for Ottawa, 2.56 to the Rangers, 2.63, 10th and 12th respectively. The Rangers, the better team on special teams, 20.2% on the power play, beating Ottawa 17%, 11th and 23rd respectively. And on the kill, the Rangers 19th to 22nd beat the Senators by 0.1%, 79.8 to 79.7. Face-offs, Ottawa the better team, 51 to 48, 10th and 22nd respectively. And let's take a look at some of the players that really led the Senators in the first round. Bobby Ryan led the way with 4 goals. Derek Brassard, 6 assists. He also had 2 goals to lead the team with 8 points. So you got to think he's fired up and ready to play the Rangers after they dealt him. Zach Smith led the way with a 56% faceoff percentage. Craig Anderson, a 921 save percentage and 4 wins against the Bruins. For the New York Rangers, Matt Zuccarello led the way with 3 goals. He had 2 of them in the deciding Game 6. Mika Zibanejad, 3 assists, and he leads the Rangers with 4 points. So both of the guys traded last summer, they lead their respective teams in points throughout the first round. Kevin Hayes, a 57% faceoff percentage. Henrik Lundqvist, absolutely phenomenal. If it wasn't for Pekka Rinne, he would have had the best first round easily, a 947 save percentage and that game one shutout. All the experts are picking the Rangers in this series, and I'm picking the Rangers too. This, like I said, they beat a better Montreal Canadiens team in round one. They have to maintain it now and beat the Ottawa Senators. One advantage I think the Rangers have, they've already played in the Bell Center, which probably is the hardest arena to play in all of hockey. Canadian Tire Center is going to be rocking. Don't get me wrong. But the Rangers have already experienced the crowd noise. They've already experienced – it's going to be a downstep. It is. I'm sorry, Ottawa Senators fans, but you don't have the aura of the Bell Center. It's going to be a great series, but I definitely think the Rangers who were the best road team in the NHL, I definitely think they can win these first 2 games on the road, split back in Madison Square Garden, and then end the series in 5. I don't think this series goes past 6. Maybe I'm overlooking the Ottawa Senators, but they are a good team. And the Rangers – realistically split the season series 1-1 with them. It is 2-1 Ottawa, but Ottawa was playing for their number 2 seed life to get home ice advantage in round one. The Rangers benched 10 starters. It was essentially the Hartford Wolfpack the Senators were playing when the Senators beat the Rangers 3-1. Who scored the goal in that game for the Rangers? Mika Zibanejad. He broke up the shutout of Craig Anderson with 40 seconds to go. So it should be a good series, but I'm taking the Rangers in 5. I think this is their path to the Eastern Conference Final. They beat Montreal. Now they have to beat Ottawa. If Henrik Lundqvist doesn't have the series he had against Montreal, the Rangers will still be okay. If Lundqvist can have a 925 save percentage, he doesn't need a 941. He can still get by the Ottawa Senators. Now, it would still be nice to have a 941 save percentage, but we'll see what happens. Personally, I think the Senators are a better team than the Boston Bruins, but like I said, Rangers in 5. So that completes my second round predictions. I have the Rangers taking on the Penguins and the Oilers taking on the Blues in the respective conference final. All right, so that does it for hockey. Let's talk a little football. That's something we haven't done on the podcast yet. And with the NFL draft coming up tomorrow, it seems like a perfect time. The NFL draft starts tomorrow night in Philadelphia at 8 p.m. And everybody's saying, who is going to be the number 1 overall pick? Do the Cleveland Browns take Myles Garrett, the defensive end out of Texas A&M? Do they go with the quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky or Deshaun Watson? Maybe they even think about Patrick Mahomes. A lot of options for the Browns. Of course, everybody has been making their opinions. The consensus is that they should take the defensive end, Myles Garrett. Fellow defensive lineman Warren Sapp said, no, do not take Myles Garrett. I do not understand why. He's a freak. Like, I saw a picture of him in high school, and I was jealous. I was straight jealous. I know I'm never going to look like that in my entire life. And he looked like that in high school. He was a man playing with boys. And then he made the NCAA his league when he just tore it up. The Cleveland Browns have to take him. And he even said himself, he's going to torture the Browns if they don't take him. A lot of people saying, oh, nobody wants to be a Cleveland Brown. They almost didn't win a game last season. But the Browns, they have a chance here to change things. They really made some good offseason moves. Of course, they acquired the contract of Brock Osweiler. He's technically their quarterback right now. And they took that contract that the Houston Texans gave him last offseason, and they took a second-round pick from the Texans for it. Look, you can take a Mitchell Trubisky, you can take a Deshaun Watson, but what good is that going to do with the current offensive line? Yeah, Joe Thomas is potentially the best left tackle in the league, but what has been the problem with the Cleveland Browns? Their quarterbacks are getting hit, they don't get protection, and they become flops. It's been, I mean, the jersey guy in Cleveland, he doesn't do that thing anymore where he adds the name of every Browns quarterback to his jersey. But I think the Browns are definitely going to do something with that 12th pick. The Cleveland Browns are not picking 12th in the NFL draft. They are going to find a team to trade up with. A lot of teams potentially thinking it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, but I definitely think the Jags want Leonard Fournette. But we'll talk about that later. The San Francisco 49ers pick second, and they have a ton of holes to fill. They really don't have any strong options going into this. When I say strong options, I mean on their team, like players that they can definitely say, hey, this is going to be a player that wins us a few games. No, this is going to be a huge rebuilding year for the San Francisco 49ers. Blaine Gabbert right now is looking like the quarterback. A lot of the experts saying Jamal Adams, the safety out of LSU. They definitely need some defensive help. They need offensive help too. So no matter what they take, going to have to help them in some way. But either way, this is looking like a team that's going to be another top five pick next season. Chicago Bears pick third. I think the consensus on them, they should definitely be looking at Marshawn Lattimore out of Ohio State. They need a cornerback, especially dealing in the NFC North with Aaron Rodgers. Teddy Bridgewater is going to come back, and Matthew Stafford. They need to boost the pass defense if they are ever going to be relevant next season. I don't think it's going to be a good season for them. Of course, Jay Cutler will not be the quarterback next season. Who knows who it is? Could be Luke McCown for all we know. Jaguars pick fourth. You already heard my take about them. I think they are definitely going with Leonard Fournette. And then when it gets down to the Titans at number five, it could be anything. I think they're going to go with defensive help. I don't think they go with Mike Williams out of Clemson, as some people have suggested. I think they need to boost their defense. And then, of course, it's the New York Jets at six, who always find a way to pick a defender with their top pick. They've gone defense, 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 and they just haven't done anything. My thinking is that the Jets trade down. I think the Jets are going to make that trade with the Cleveland Browns for the number 12 overall pick. The Browns will give them one of their other nine picks in the draft at that point. If the Browns make the number one overall pick and then the number 12 pick aside, they would have nine more for 11 total. I think the Jets definitely think they can get a good difference maker, maybe Mike Williams out of Clemson down at 12. He could fall, who knows. But the Jets have just made it clear that their philosophy is defense, defense, defense. I think the Browns trade up to 12. I think they take Trubisky there at 6. All right, everybody. Well, that will do it for this episode. Man, that really flew by. Hope you enjoyed the show. It, of course, will always be up for replay on Blog Talk Radio. I'm CJ Rio. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 p.m. as always. Have a good day, everybody. We'll see you next time.